Book Hype. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Brittany and Karen. Hey guys, how's it going?
Hey. It's very hot.
It is. It's disgustingly hot here. I think we're all kind of in the same kind of area in the Northeast, and it is scorching for the next couple of days, at least, they say. So it's kind of disgusting. And yeah, in the winter, we complain about the cold and the snow, so I guess we can't really win.
Yeah, there's like maybe 3 days when we're not recording that are fantastic.
Exactly. It's a nice temperature change. You know, you can go out and just be comfortable. Not right now, however. All right, so let's get started because Karen and I have been traveling and Brittany's been doing lots of cool stuff. So let's get started with what we've been reading. And Karen, I'm going to have you go first.
Okay. First two are both comic books. I've read Wonder Woman Volume 4, War, by Brian Azzarello. And that one was really good. Like, I know I've been saying for a while that I really like this run of Wonder Woman from the new 52, but this one was really emotional, and I wasn't expecting that from a comic book, so it was kind of different and nice. And I also read Hellboy Volume 1, Seed of Destruction, because I love Hellboy. I love the Hellboy movies, and I figured I should go back to the source material, and that's by Mike Mignola, and it was really good. So I'm excited to keep going with that one. I've also read, Brittany, this is for you, Ready Player One by Ernest Cline.
Yay.
And
did you like it? You don't have to. You don't have to like it.
It's not that I disliked it. I was just a little bored, which I wasn't expecting. Because I really liked the premise, and I thought that it was just such a cool story, but unless they were right in the middle of, like, one of the levels, I guess you can call it, where they were trying to find the thing, I was like, okay, can we just get to the next part? And maybe that is kind of a testament to how good it was, because I really just wanted to keep reading, to keep finding out what was happening. I was really interested in the story, but it was just hard to get through. So I was surprised that I didn't like it as much as I thought I was going to.
That's okay.
Yeah. And then I also read Fangirl's Guide to the Galaxy by Sam Maggs. And this book, like, made me cry. It was really weird. But it's because, you know, for anyone who hasn't read it yet, it's basically just a rundown of different fandoms and the things that you can do as a female fan to kind of get together with other girls. And, you know, it's not just about girls. I mean, that's who she's speaking to, but you can apply a lot of this stuff to anybody. And it was just talking about how cool it is to be a geek and to love the things that you love and how to cosplay and how to go to conventions and what to do and not to do. And I knew probably 90% of the stuff in there already, but it was nice to read about it anyway and just to know that, oh, hey, I do that too. You know, it's sort of a universal thing. So it was, I read it on the plane to San Diego Comic-Con, which is like the perfect thing to read when you're going to a convention. And actually all four of the things I read over the last week or two were perfect convention related books.
Awesome. Did I tell you I met Sam Maggs? She writes for, does she write for
the Mary Sue?
I met her at the Penguin Random House party.
Oh, cool.
She's very cool. Yeah. That's why I'm like, wait, I know that name. And it took me a second to place it. I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah, no, she's very cool. That's awesome that you liked her book. And I know she's working on something else, too. There's a new book that she's working on that sounded really cool. Wow. Something about the history of women. So it's got a lot of potential.
Awesome.
Yeah. So for me, I only read two books because I am the biggest slacker on the face of the earth. Let's be real. First of all, I listened to Paper Towns while I traveled because it was just easier than trying to read on a plane. It's sometimes nice to just kind of like sit back and relax in your seat and just have someone else tell you the story. So I listened to Paper Towns, given that Paper Towns is coming out shortly at the theaters. And I have to say, I actually didn't mind Paper Towns. A lot of times when I listen or read to a John Green novel, I have issues with some of the dialogue and stuff. It's hard for me. But I didn't mind Paper Towns that much at all. And I actually liked the idea of having, you know, the Q, the character, and his friends and how they interacted and stuff like that. It was pretty cool and how they kind of go on this adventure on this road trip. So I really didn't mind it at all, which is pretty high praise for me when it comes to John Green novels. So
plus the Black Santas really make the book.
Okay, yeah. Can I liked his friends a lot, actually. I felt like they were more real than some of the characters you sometimes read about. Sometimes I feel like his characters come off as like so intellectual, or their dialogue is just not the dialogue of a teenager in some ways. But this, I actually didn't mind at all. And I liked his friends. Radar and is it Ben?
Yeah.
Those are the two boys, right? Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed them. I thought they were a lot of fun. And I felt Lacey was a good portrayal of a female just, you know, who's stuck being the popular girl and all the things that kind of come along with that and how it works and doesn't work. And so I thought it was really interesting. And like I said, I do like the road trip that I go on to find Margot. And so it was really cool. I actually, like I said, it was one of the novels of his that I actually really enjoyed. So it'll be interesting to see how the movie plays, because I've seen the trailers now, and now that I've like have the book fresh in my mind, I can see where things have already changed that are different from the novel and the movie just in the trailer. So it'll be interesting to see how much they kind of play with it and what they make different.
Yeah, I'm curious. I don't know. I mean, like, this is one that I'm not excited to go see. I was excited to go see The Fault in Our Stars. Right. This one, I'm not thrilled about seeing, because I did like the book. And I saw a couple of scenes from it, and I've seen the trailer, obviously. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm thrilled with the casting. I don't know what it is about it. It could be the cast. It could be something else. I don't know. So I'm going to go see it, but I'm not like counting down the days until it comes out.
Yeah. We'll have to see how it plays out. We'll have to have a conversation about it when we've seen it and kind of go from there. And the second book I read is called The Fixer by Jennifer Lynn Barnes. If you guys like Scandal or The High Society by Allie Carter or those kinds of books, you will love this book. Jennifer Lynn Barnes is a really cool author because she has like her doctorate in animals, like, or a biology, and she deals with like animals. And so she wrote, her first set of books was about wolves. So she, like, in her books, it's like werewolves. So her pack mentality and stuff, her description is phenomenal because she studies that in animals. So now she kind of takes a different route where she's dealing with Washington, D.C. And her character is a girl who's just transitioned to live with her older sister, who is DC's number one fixer. So if you guys watch Scandal, she's like the Olivia Pope of this scenario. And then so the teenage sister goes and moves in with her, and she becomes kind of the fixer at her high school kind of accidentally. And so the two of them are the fixers, and eventually they're fixing crosses paths. And it's kind of just a really cool intrigue story set amongst, you know, political DC and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So it was a really fun book, and I think you guys would like it. It's pretty light. It's not too heavy.
You keep saying DC, and I keep thinking DC Comics.
Oh, no.
That's where my head is.
As in the nation's capital. No supervillains that, well, I take that back. No superheroes necessarily there. Villains, perhaps. So, yeah, but it's just really cool. Like, it's a really fun story. It's not something that's super heavy or super complicated where you have to, like, pay tons and tons of attention. It's just a really good read. So definitely suggest that one for you guys, too. Especially if you're going to, like, the beach and you just want something kind of fun and frothy to read, this is definitely a good one. And Miss Brittany, let's talk about you. What have you been up to?
Well, you guys abandoned me and went to California, so I read 6 books while you were gone.
As you do.
So I read our July book, and When We Were Animals by Joshua Gaylord, and I'm going to stay tight-lipped on that until we get to our discussion next week, but it was good. I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected to. And then I picked up a book that I've had on my bookshelf forever called The Tragedy Paper by Elizabeth Laban, and it was so good. I don't know why I waited so long. It's set in a boarding school, and it's for high school, and when you're a junior, the seniors know who's getting their room next year, and they leave them a treasure. And then the whole point of your senior year English is to write what's called a tragedy paper. And that's the only thing you're really, it's like your grade at the end. And so they study Hamlet, and they have to, like, they either write about something real or they tie it in academically to Hamlet. And then you basically present it at the end of the year, and that's your, what your focus is. So this one kid, Duncan, gets like the crappy room, and he knew that this kid was, who was in it before him, like something happened to him, and he knew it, and he didn't want to relive the a night that had happened when he was a junior. So like the whole book, you're waiting and waiting and waiting to find out what this event was. But his treasure was a collection of CDs that Tim, who had the room before him, recorded. So he told the whole like oral history of his senior year, and that he's like, I'm giving you the greatest gift you can have. I'm giving you your tragedy paper. So Tim's story ended up becoming the tragedy paper for this kid. And you finally find out at the end why their two lives were intertwined. And it was so good. I read it in like 2 hours. It was that good. And then, much to the disappointment of the book hype crew that they just found out that I finally read We Were Liars by E. Lockhart. I'm sorry, it took me so long, and I want to read it again immediately because it was so good. So old news, everyone probably knows what it's about by now. I'm late to the party, but it was fantastic, and I want to read it again. Then on my quest to catch up to Chris Colfer's last release, I finished the third book in his series, The Land of Stories, A Grim Warning, and I think it was my favorite one so far. So I'm looking forward to reading the fourth one, which I have to buy now. And then I wanted something short because I wanted to have six books. So I picked up The Ocean at the End of the Lane, which I've also had forever and never finished. So I reread that by Neil Gaiman. And it's no American Gods, but it's really good. It's short. It's very Neil Gaiman-y. And if you like him, I would definitely just read it. And then to start our conversation for today, I will talk about the last book that I read, which was Ghosts at a Watchman by Harper Lee. And it did not ruin my childhood. But contrary to every headline you've ever read on the internet about this book, I was fine. I survived. Atticus is still Atticus. I'm okay. I liked it. It read like a very rough draft. There are a lot of things that you will remember immediately from reading To Kill a Mockingbird, like passages, even like there are at least like 3 or 4 pages that were directly made it into To Kill a Mockingbird. And there's like a scene with Jem and Dill and Scout, and it was so good. I loved the Scout that we read in Ghost at a Watchman. I think she was brilliant. She's like growing up. She's 26 in this book. She's just trying to like come to terms with her father being sick and not feeling at home in Alabama anymore and not feeling really at home in New York. She's kind of lost. And it's interesting to read it as someone who is almost 25 and thinking about like, where do I fit in? Where do I belong? Are my values still the same as they were when I was little? Like, what did my parents teach me that I need to take with me into life? And you're going back and examining something that you once loved and knew, which is the same thing that you're doing as a reader going back and comparing this against To Kill a Mockingbird. So I thought it was very meta in a way. And I really enjoyed it. There were, yes, there are troubling passages. The way she tried to write the racism in like the deep-seated Southern elitist racism in the end was very choppy, and you can tell it wasn't her forte. She had a lot to say and didn't know how to say it. And I think that that's where the biggest weakness in the book is. But I think everything leading up to that was great. There's a new love interest. Scout is very flirty with this guy, Henry. And I loved those passages. I also loved her relationship with her aunt, who is now living with them because Atticus is really ill. And I really liked it. There's also a weird part where they go to church and they're trying to change hymns. And I could tell she was trying to work that into her Southern thing. And it was weird. But, yeah, I would recommend reading it and knowing that this was the first draft. It was not what To Kill a Mockingbird became. Like, this was first, so it's not going to kill Atticus for anyone. But I recommend it. Well, you guys, do you guys think you're going to read it?
Yeah, I probably will now that I'm, like, back and settled and have time to pick it up. What I think is so funny, because I did read a lot of articles about it because I was curious, I feel like a lot of the kind of the pushback and the, oh, it's terrible, has to do with the fact that it's such a big deal that it's being released in the first place. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, oh, no, I get that. And after reading it, I would have been fine never knowing this existed.
Right. And I think that's, I don't know. I just think a lot of it has to do with, you know, when things are popular or things have a lot of buzz, so people automatically, like, freak out about them. And sometimes it can go in a bad way. And I think that just the general commentary in this one wasn't what people wanted. So because it wasn't what they wanted, they're going to complain about it. Not to say that it's terrible, but it just wasn't what they wanted. You know, seeing Atticus the way he was, because I have heard some of the comments about him and stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's interesting to see after such a long period of time. And I think the other thing that's really important to note is that this was the very first book she wrote, and she was told to shelve it. They didn't want it. It wasn't what they wanted at the time. Yeah. But they thought it would be interesting for her to write about what happened before this. So if you have this book that was written way back when, and it hasn't really been tweaked or changed that much, it just stayed with in order to kind of go with, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird, then it's not going to be quite right. It's going to be antiquated. It's not going to shift in any way. And I don't think it's been rewritten all that much, if at all. So it's probably what it was in the first place. So it's not going to lend itself to being really popular. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have the same feel.
Yeah, it was, but I, again, like, knowing that and going in, I think a lot of people, when they wrote their reviews, they focused on what they didn't like, why they didn't like it, and that's what made the reviews. Especially, I've seen a lot of things that are, like, all they cite is, it's literally two lines in the book that Atticus went to, like, a KKK meeting, and yes, he did. He went to one because he wanted to know who was under the hoods. He didn't like that he didn't know who was there. And that's so, all he did.
Right.
But everyone is citing that as, like, he's the worst person alive. He went to a KKK meeting. But it is explained in the book why he went. And that is the only detail about it that in every single article I've read that has driven me mad. Like, I'm like, I don't think it's a huge deal. Because right. His motivation is explained.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, everyone's going to have... I mean, and then I saw some articles, like, questioning why everyone loves To Kill a Mockingbird and should we question it? And I'm like, seriously? That book has been on every reading list ever for decades, and now you're going to question it because you didn't like the second book?
Yeah, and they probably haven't read To Kill a Mockingbird since they were in seventh grade.
Exactly.
And they're like, oh, I have such fond memories of reading that book because we watched the movie in class.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I don't know. I think it's one of those things where everything's really reactionary.
Mm-hmm.
And we get that a lot nowadays with things. Like, it's not cool to be the popular kid. If you're the popular kid, you're going to get torn down at some point in time. So I feel like that's just what's happening with this. In this particular case,
yeah.
You know, because I haven't seen a lot of actual critical, well-supported reviews or complaints. A lot of it's just been kind of this random stuff, like you said, like the one line that they picked out to justify their point. It's one line. It's not the entirety of the book. So I guess we'll see.
But I recommend it, even if you are nervous about reading it, take it with a grain of salt and read it. I think it's good. Like, it's a good read. It's not the best book ever written. It's definitely not fine-tuned, but I would recommend reading it.
All right. Good to know. All right. So let's get talking about some of the things we did at Comic-Con, which is Brittany's favorite part of our conversation.
Woohoo! I'm just going to take show notes for a little while. I'll see you later.
Poor Brittany. But feel free to chime in on anything you saw that you liked, because you were... checking out the coverage and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. I was following it all.
Especially
when people were like, I can't make an image. Can someone help me?
Yeah. You have some internet problems with, like, Inhal H and all that good stuff, so that was a problem. We can't make an image. We can't type up our stuff. It was awesome. All right, so we're going to talk about the non-book stuff we did first, because we get to see some cool things, and then we'll kind of go from there. So, Karen, do you want to kick it off? What non-book stuff did you do, Teen Wolf?
Yeah, I was just, and, okay, the thunder is really bad, so sorry in advance for all the background noise. But, yes, there was lots of Teen Wolf to be had, and I had it all. I went to the panel, and I went to the roundtables, and there's going to be a season 6, which is really exciting. That means my other podcast can stay in business for, like, another 2 years, which is always exciting. And let's see, what else did I do? Oh, I went to Scream, which is cool. I really like that show. And I just remembered something else that I did, but that falls under the book stuff, so I'll talk about that later. But, gosh, I don't know. It wasn't that long ago, but I'm already, like, Comic-Con is such a whirlwind that I can never, like, actually remember what happened while I was there. What else did I do that was non-book related?
Oh, you went to NerdHQ.
I did. Although that's book related.
Oh, what you went for was book related?
Yeah.
Did you go and see the WB stuff on Wednesday night, on opening night, the new shows?
I did not, because I spent all of Wednesday night trying to get in line for Funko, which did not happen.
Yeah, Funko? Okay, that's maybe we can talk about the show floor a little bit, because let's just discuss, like, how crazy some of those booths were. The Funko booth to get any of the little, like, really cool Funko dolls was almost impossible. Like, it was dangerous.
It was impossible.
it was crazy. Crazy. Because you were trying to get the Evil Queen, weren't you?
Yes. A bunch of other stuff, but that's the one I wanted for myself.
Yeah. So, like, absolutely insane. And then the other one that was right next to Funko is called Tokidoki. I didn't even know what they sold, but the line for Tokidoki was out of control. Like, it was dangerous over there, because you had the one Funko line, and then you had the Tokidoki line, and then people were just, like, going crazy. I was a little afraid. So those things were crazy. Did you get to see any cool artists in Artist Alley? I know you like to check that stuff out.
Yes. I got to go to Karen Hallian, which is, like, pretty much my favorite artist in the entire world. And I got to pick up a Megara print from her that was exclusive to San Diego Comic-Con. And I got a Mulan sketch card, which I've been wanting to add to my three favorite female Disney characters, which are Megara, Pocahontas, and Mulan. So now my little set is complete. So I have a problem, guys. I spent so much money on art. It's terrible. But I basically went around the show floor looking for people who are either accepting commissions or already sold Megara art. Megara from Hercules, if anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about. And I got so many different Megara stuff. I'm going to have an entire wall.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. One of them is historically accurate Megara, and it is so cool.
That's awesome. I like it. All right. So what else? So you didn't do any other non-book related stuff. That was it.
I'm sure that I did. Yeah.
What panels did you attend? Did you attend any non-book? I mean, Scream and Teen Wolf, but did you do anything else? You're like, no, Teen Wolf is my life.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what it felt like. I actually interviewed the cast of Gotham, which was really exciting.
Let's see. I knew you did something.
Yeah, I did. I did something while I was there. I'm sure of it.
So, did you get to interview the guy who plays the Penguin?
No, I was really disappointed, but I got to interview the guy who plays Edward Nygma, and the Riddler is my favorite villain from, like, the Batman universe, so that was really cool. And I vaguely saw Marina Baccarin, which I was really hoping to talk to her. She's from Firefly, and I did not get to do that. I got a picture of the back of her head. That is as close as I got, but that's just going to have to be good enough for now.
Do you know that she's in the Deadpool movie?
Yes, I do. And I'm really excited. I mean, I'm really excited about Deadpool in general, but
yes. You have no idea.
No, I don't. I really don't.
So For me, I did a lot of non-book related stuff. I think it's because I always do all the book related stuff on the site that when I get to go to Comic-Con and there's all this other stuff I really like, that I do all the other stuff instead of all the book stuff. I know that sounds really backwards, but it's like my mini break. So on the Wednesday night, I got to see three new shows. I got to see Supergirl, Limitless. Oh, actually, I lie. I got to see four new shows. Supergirl, Limitless, Containment, and Blindspot. Limitless looks really, really cool.
Yes. I love that.
Actually, I didn't see Limitless on Wednesday. I saw it at the panel. I'm like, I just know I saw it. It looks really, really cool. I think with any pilot, it had a couple of issues, but in general, I think given a shot, it's going to do really well. I really, really love the guy playing the lead, Jake McDormand. He was on Greek, if any of you guys ever watched Greek, which I loved. He was one of the guys on Greek, and so he's really cool. And then, as if you guys have seen the previews for it on TV, Bradley Cooper makes a little bit of an appearance because it is based on the Bradley Cooper movie. So it's really fun. I liked it. Supergirl is really cute. It's way better than I thought it was going to be. Because, you know, sometimes, like, you get a pilot and they have an idea and you're like, oh, this could go either way. And because it's not, like, Arrow and Flash and everything are on the CW, and I think they have a very specific vibe and they know what they want to be, and they're doing that and they're doing it successfully. Supergirl is on CBS, so I wasn't really sure what to expect because of the network change. Like, it's not the same vibe on CBS at all. So I was pleasantly surprised by the Supergirl trailer, or the Supergirl pilot. Again, a couple of things here and there, but overall I was pleasantly surprised. So I think it'll be really interesting to see where that progresses to. It's got a lot of potential. And I love the guy that's playing Jimmy Olsen. I love him. He's so fantastic as an actor, and he's going to be really great, I think, as Jimmy Olsen.
And is that then Jeremy Jordan?
It's Mikad Brooks.
Yeah. I don't know any of their their character names, so I just.
Oh yeah. I like him a lot. He's really good. I've seen him in some other things, so I think it's awesome. He's playing Jimmy Olsen, and he's playing Jimmy Olsen with a really cool vibe. I like it. So I think
this is why I can't talk about anything, because
you're like, I just don't know.
Especially superheroes, forget it. I'm just, count me out. I don't know anything.
And then I saw, what else did I say?
Blind Spot,
yes. Okay, Blind Spot is like the Jason Bourne of TV, but female. In some ways. It's played by Jamie Alexander, who is Lady Sif from Thor. And she basically wakes up in a duffel bag in the middle of Times Square. And she's naked, and she's covered in freshly minted tattoos. And I mean, covered from head to toe. And she's got an FBI agent's name tattooed on her back. So they bring him in. She has no idea who he is. There's no recollection whatsoever. But they discover that her tattoos have meaning, or that one of them has meaning. And it helps them kind of uncover this plot that's occurring. And so they realize that she's someone, but they don't know who she is, where she came from. None of her fingerprints or DNA are on file anywhere. And as the first episode progresses, you realize that she's connected to something, and they figure it out because she can do things that she really shouldn't be able to do. And it kind of goes from there. And I don't want to say too much because I don't want to ruin the pilot because it's really cool. This pilot was incredibly well done, and I think it's going to be a really cool show to watch kind of unfold and to see why the things are happening that are and what her role is in it, because you begin to think one thing and then you get hints that it's totally something else. So that was really cool.
That trailer, I saw that trailer on one of those YouTube ads that you could like skip after 5 seconds, except I didn't skip it because it looked so good that I just sat there like, I want to see this. So I'm really glad that you like the pilot. I'm definitely going to be tuning into that.
Yeah, if anyone likes Blacklist, which is one of my favorite shows on TV right now, it's got a little bit of a vibe of Blacklist to it, too, like the whole crime aspect of it. So it's just got a really cool vibe to it. It's different. I like it. I like Jamie Alexander in this role. Mm-hmm. I think she's really strong in this role, which is cool. So that was pretty awesome. And then we watched Containment. And Containment is actually a CW show. It does not in any way, shape, or form feel like a CW show at all. Containment is basically about this virus that this outbreak that begins. And so what they decide to do is cordon off the neighborhood that the virus is in order to try and stop the spread of the virus. And it's pretty gruesome. So it's really interesting to see. And again, it's on CW. Doesn't feel like a CW show. It's pretty cool. Reminded me a little bit, if any of you guys have seen The Last Ship, which is also a virus outbreak one. A little bit different, but there's that vibe to it. And I don't know, it's cool. I also saw trailers and previews for Fear the Walking Dead, and it kind of has that vibe to it a little bit, except they automatically know what's going on. They know that this is a virus. They know that it's spreading really quickly. They know that it's rapid deterioration. So that's why they contain, you know, they put a containment in place. So it's really interesting. And the guy who played Kai from The Vampire Diaries is one of the leads. So, yeah, totally worth checking out.
I saw a show, now that I think about it. I saw the pilot for Lucifer.
Oh, cool. Yes.
It was amazing. If you were destroyed over the fact that Constantine was canceled, like I was, Lucifer will definitely help fill the void. And it's a really funny show, which you would not expect. But it's basically about Lucifer, like, yes, that Lucifer, doesn't want to be in charge of hell anymore. So he comes up to Earth and he kicks back and he owns a nightclub and he's just kind of chilling out and he doesn't want to do his job. And God gets his minions to come down and try to get him to go back, but he refuses. And he has this ability to have people admit their deepest desires, and in that way he can sort of like get them to do things for him. Except he meets this one detective that it doesn't work on her. She's totally immune to his powers and he cannot figure out why. And over the course of the episode, you see that he's like literally the devil. He is Lucifer, but he's not necessarily like 100% evil. He's sort of like apathetic. Like he doesn't really care that much, but he does have some people that he likes and wants to help. And when one of them gets killed, it kind of sets in motion his desire to have justice for the person that murdered her. And I think it's going to be a really good show.
Yeah, Laura saw the preview of that too. And as soon as she saw it, she's like, we have to cover this. She's like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. So, and Tom Ellis is playing Lucifer.
Oh my God.
And Tom Ellis was the original Robin Hood on Once Upon a Time. For those of you who don't remember way back when, he is adorable. I love him.
That's awesome. He makes a fantastic Lucifer.
Amazing. And some other stuff I did while at Comic-Con, because I did do a lot of TV and movie stuff. I also covered, I sat in Hall H all day on Saturday for Superhero Saturday because I'm a junkie. So I got to see the new Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice stuff, the Suicide Squad stuff, which you guys are gonna be absurd. And Viola Davis as Amanda Waller. Yes, please. Like, I think she's going to be so ridiculous. And then, of course, there was Deadpool. My love for Ryan Reynolds knows no bounds. And to have him on stage and, like, talking about Deadpool. And then we saw the trailer not once, but twice for Deadpool. Because the place was, like, they showed it once and the place just went ballistic. And everyone was, like, on their feet, standing ovation. And then they started chanting one more time. So they showed it again. It was out of control. Like, it's going to be, it's an R-rated film, and for good reason. It's going to be insane. So that, what else did we see? Oh, and some booky stuff that I saw while in there. I saw the Scorched Trials panel. And I think it's going to do just as well as the Maze Runner did. It looks really, really good. Karen, give us some more information. You saw some more on the Scorched Trials, right? What did you see on Scorched Trials?
I saw the first 30 minutes.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, that's it. No big deal. Move on. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I think it looks better than The Maze Runner already, and I loved The Maze Runner. But this movie starts and does not stop. The first 30 minutes is like just this really mysterious kind of mix, and it's not exactly from the books, and they explained why they kind of mixed it up a little bit. And I mean, I've always said that I like the movie better than the book in this case, which is really rare, but I think that the concept of the book is so cinematic that it just works so much better as a movie. And the Scorch Trials, you guys remember in The Maze Runner how he runs through the closing doors? And it's like this really intense, like, oh, is he going to make it? And he does at the last second, and you're just kind of like on the edge of your seat. There's a part like that in Scorch Trials too, kind of the same exact thing, where he has to slide under this door. And it's just like, I could feel myself like leaning toward the screen because it was so intense. And I'm so excited for this movie to come out. And thankfully, it's only a couple of months away now in September.
Yeah, it's very cool. I like what I saw. The stuff that they showed us was super creepy. We saw the pranks.
Yeah. Oh my god. Okay, so
yeah.
I don't know if I told you this, but Donnie and I were at the Nerd HQ, and they showed that clip as well, which I was really thankful because I couldn't get into the panel. We were holding hands the whole time because it was so scary.
Yeah, it was
don't
creepy.
Do well with the horror, but yeah, it was super intense. They're not holding back.
Yeah, no, not at all. So creepy. And let's see. Oh, I know. I also saw, you guys, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. I saw the trailer for this and sat at the panel, and I'm kind of in love with it. I'm not going to lie. I didn't think I would be, but you guys. Like, I can't even. Seriously, they're totally playing it straight, Pride and Prejudice. Except with zombies. Like, that's not even a joke. Like, if you guys have never read, I think his name is Seth Graham Smith, his book, Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, it is essentially, literally, the Jane Austen novel interjected with, like, people becoming zombies, and the Bennett sisters are badass zombie hunters. Like, not even a joke. Totally happening. Like, it's hard to describe, but at the same time, I'm kind of in love with it. So, we got to see a couple of previews from it, and I can't wait to see it. It looks like so much fun. And Matt Smith is Mr. Collins. Like, I don't know if I can explain that any better, but Matt Smith is Mr. Collins. Like, he's supremely creepy, and you hope a zombie gets him. And the beauty about the zombies in Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies is it kind of sweeps this panic through the ton, because what happens is you don't know if someone's actually a zombie. Like, you can't tell right away when they're infected. So they become infected, but they still look human. So anyone could be infected, and they could in turn infect you by, you know, having a snack on you. So it gets really, really cool. Like, it's a lot of fun. And Mr. Zarcy is also a zombie hunter as well. Like, there's a scene that they showed where he literally walks in and he's like trying to figure out who the zombie in the room is. So he releases carrion flies. And because zombies are dead, the carrion flies will clearly go to the dead person in the room. And so, like, it's this whole scene where, like, they're in this drawing room and everyone's in their finest, and he's releasing carrion flies to figure out who the zombie is in the room. It's so funny. So yeah, so there's that, and I'm like seriously excited about it, which I know sounds really strange, but it looks so funny. So something to keep in mind. And then the last thing I saw that was I don't know if it's it's not necessarily an adaptation, but it's a story based on a fictional character, and it's called Victor Frankenstein. And within this story, there is there's Igor, and Igor is played by Daniel Radcliffe. So that's really cool. Can you guys still hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, and you're leaving out one of the most important parts, is that Dr. Frankenstein is played by James McAvoy.
Yeah, no. Well, I wasn't sure if you guys could hear me because you weren't saying anything, so I got
was
nervous.
I was typing furiously.
At the storm, like,
you guys are, like, everything. Powering through.
Hey, we do what we gotta do. Yeah, okay, can I tell you about this panel with James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe? It was so inappropriate. James McAvoy is a filthy, filthy man, but in all the right ways. Like, I'm not even kidding you.
I watched it online. It was so good.
You guys, too. Seriously, drop the link in, because it is one of the best panels ever. ever. Like, James McAvoy is amazing. I love him. I need to see more of him in this way because he's hysterical. And Daniel Radcliffe is, like, so uncomfortable. He just doesn't know what to do. You can tell he's used to, like, the Harry Potter crowd who are very appropriate. And he's just like, I don't think we should. Oh, I didn't mean it that way. And, oh, God, it's amazing. But the movie itself actually looks really, really cool. Because I was like, another Frankenstein as I'm sitting there. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? And then they start to show you, and you're like, oh, like, it looks really, really fun. So I think it's got a lot of potential as well. And Karen, you love Frankenstein, so.
I do.
This might be a movie for you. James McAvoy's Frankenstein and Daniel Radcliffe as Igor. Oh, it's got a lot of potential. It's there. I like it. All right. And Karen, I know you saw something else too. I've only seen like a clip of the trailer, but you were at the panel. So why don't you go ahead and tell us?
Yes. Boy, do I have a pitch for you guys. Because I attended the Shannara Chronicles panel. And this is something that I honestly had not been following that much. I knew that as somebody who covers Teen Wolf and has helped cover other MTV shows, that we were going to look into this show because it's also on MTV. And I wasn't really paying attention to the casting. I didn't know any of the characters' names or anything like that. So I was going in completely unbiased. I sit on the panel and holy crap, this show is going to be amazing. It's a show based on the books, The Shannara Chronicles by Terry Brooks. And it's a fairly old series. It's been going on, I think they said, for like 20 years. I mean, there are a lot of books in this series. And they're basing the first season off of the Elfstones. And it's basically about, like, elves and humans. And, you know, it's that very much high fantasy sort of feel to it. It's got Manu Bennett in it, who is on Arrow. He was on Arrow as Deathstroke. I think that was his name.
Yes, I think so.
Yes. And it's got John Rhys Davies in it. So those are two huge names attached to it. And those two guys were probably the most vocal about how amazing this show is, which I was really excited about. It is filming in New Zealand, and a lot of the people who worked on Lord of the Rings are working on the show, and they've got practical sets, so not a whole lot of CGI, which I love my Teen Wolf, but their CGI is not pretty sometimes. But I think that this, they're going to try to do as many practical effects as they can, and that's really important for a high fantasy show because you want it to look as realistic as possible. The trailer, they played the trailer, and it looks amazing. Like, I laugh every time the title comes up at the end because the little MTV logo pops up above it, and I keep forgetting it's on MTV because you would not expect a show that looks of this high quality to be on MTV. Did you like the trailer, Jen?
I'm astounded by the trailer.
Yeah.
Because, again, I'm like, I'm sorry, is that the MTV logo? Yes. What on earth? Like, it doesn't make any sense. It feels like it shouldn't be there. But it is so cool. And the story itself, it just looks so interesting and different. And there's not a lot of this on TV right now.
Nope.
So if it can be on TV and it can be well done, you know, it's got a lot of potential. Like, I'm kind of excited about that, too.
Yeah, I mean, John Rhys Davies was like, guys, if this show doesn't work, if this doesn't make it, I don't know what will. And he just kept going on and on about how the cast is incredible, that they're all beautiful, but they're all extremely good actors, and how he just really loves the story, and the books are so amazing. And, like, I mean, obviously he's not going to say anything bad about a project he's working on, but he also didn't have to sit there for, like, 5 minutes at a time, like, just being like, guys, please, this show is incredible. You need to watch it. So if nothing else gets you excited, that should, because he's done a lot of things and he definitely knows, I think, when something's going to tank and when something's worth looking into.
Yeah, I think it's got so much potential. So I really hope people check it out. Because, I mean, MTV is doing a lot with their original TV shows, and I think a lot of them are doing really well. And some of them haven't gotten the viewership that they needed, eye candy, to stay around. But I think I'm a little bitter about that still. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
still
me too.
My feelings. But I think they've got a lot. And this is just something so completely different from that for them. Like, it might not be, everyone might be going, I'm not going to watch an MTV show, but this particular show is not, does not have the vibe of an MTV show. Definitely check out the trailer and check it out, because I really think it's got a lot of potential, and it looks so cool, especially if you like high fantasy. It's not letting you down at the moment, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. Anything else that you, you saw at Comic-Con that you wanted to talk about?
Book-related cosplays.
Oh, yeah.
Because I saw a Ready Player One, Parsifal, and Artemis cosplay. I did not get a picture of them because I would have had to have, like, fought through crowds of people. And I only do that if someone's dressed up as Iron Man. And I did it twice, so I feel like I was at my limit. But I did see them. They were dressed in, like their gear, and they had these like wire things sticking out of their backpacks, I think they had on their back, and it had little like their name tags. So it was like their little things that float above the characters' heads to tell you who they are. It was really clever.
Wow, that is pretty impressive. I like it. And you also did some interviews, author interviews, that will be popping up on Hypeable soon.
Yes, I did. As Jen says, she takes breaks at Comic-Con and does other things. That means she very kindly gives us a lot of book things to do, which I was really excited about because I got to interview Sabaa Tahir, who did An Ember in the Ashes, who is so cool, by the way. Like, yes. She's really, really fun to talk to and just very, like, engaging. And we talked about the sequel and we talked about the masks. We had a long discussion about the masks. So definitely stay tuned for that interview next week. I think it's going to be really good. And I also got to talk to Julie Kagawa, who does the Iron Fae series and, by favorite, the Talon series. And she was really interesting to talk to as well. She's finishing up her Iron Fae series, which she teased like three deaths or something like that. I mean, she's not holding back in this final book. So,
nope.
Yeah, she's going all out. And she's talking a little bit about the Talon series as well. And it was another really good interview. And we actually got to go outside and talk. So we were in the sunshine. It was nice. And we passed by these people who were sparring. And she does that sort of thing, too. And she was like, can I go do that? And I was like, but our interview? Like, she was really into it. She wanted to go spar. It was cute.
Awesome. So you have Julie Kagawa and Sabaa Tahir, and I really wanted to interview Sabaa, but I had a conflict, unfortunately. So
thank you.
I know. Karen was like, yes. We also have interviews with Leigh Bardugo, Marie Lu, Rainbow Rowell. That one might have already been up. Rainbow's might have already been up, but we have that one as well. Lots of different things coming up for us for book interviews from Comic-Con, so that'll be really, really cool. And Brittany, you had some things you wanted to talk about that were not necessarily Comic-Con related, but kind of Comic-Con related, so you go for it.
Well, first of all, one thing that is directly Comic-Con related that I helped Natalie out with was at the Hannibal panel. Hannibal finished its first story arc last night, and now they're moving directly into the Red Dragon story, which is going to be taken like right from the book, and I'm very excited because there was a preview of Richard Armitage, who's going to be playing Francis Dolarhyde, and
Shut up.
Looks so creepy, and it's going to be so good. I am really looking forward to it. And Brian Fuller was like teasing a while ago that the episode 8, which is airing next, like this upcoming week, is mostly silent, and it's directed by I forget what his name is, but he's like a horror movie director, and it's just mostly silent, and it's like Francis Dolarhyde becoming the Red Dragon, and I think it's going to be so good, and I'm really looking forward to it. So if you want to read the Red Dragon and know what to expect like I did, it's really good. So I'm looking forward to that. And then my 1000% not Comic-Con related thing that I wanted to talk about was the new David Foster Wallace movie that's coming out July 31st that I completely forgot about until I went to see Mr. Holmes and they played the trailer in the movie, and I got so excited. I love David Foster Wallace. I think he's brilliant. But anyway, it's about his book tour right after he released Infinite Jest, which was in 1996. And he goes on a book tour with a Rolling Stones reporter, and they're together for 5 days. And he's played by Jesse Eisenberg. And it just follows them for the 5 days of the tour that they were together. And it's just him interviewing David Foster Wallace for a piece that he's going to write. And Jason Segel plays David Foster Wallace. And I'm so excited to see it. And they were originally not going to make this movie because it was never like approved by his estate or anything, because David Foster Wallace committed suicide in 2008, and he wrote Dave Lipsky, who wrote the book about David Foster Wallace. It came out after his 2 years after his death, and then it got turned into this movie. So I'm looking forward to it. I read Infinite Jest in my freshman year of college, and it's so long. It's so long, but it's one of, like, I think the reason why I have such a problem with YA dystopian novels is because I compare it to Infinite Jest, and I think Infinite Jest is just brilliant. It's so complex and interesting, and like that North American type dystopia that is just cannot be matched. Like, I mean, Divergent's good and a couple of others are okay, but this one, oh, it's just so good. If you can get through Infinite Jest, your life will be better for it. I'm excited. That's what I'm going to be doing July 31st if anyone needs me. It's probably not playing anywhere near me. I'm probably going to have to drive like 3 hours to see it, but I'm going to.
I bet it'll play in the city.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. We have a couple of like weird theaters around here that only play movies like this, like, you know, films that were like huge at Sundance and like stuff like that, and like Tribeca. So like, I'm hoping that one of them will be playing it.
Cool. And by the way, I totally messed up that other book. It's by Renee Adhier, and it's called The Wrath and the Dawn.
Okay.
So,
cool.
Yeah, totally my bad. I just wanted to correct that. So people are like, what are you talking about, Jen? That would be it. Okay, so very cool. You saw Mr. Holmes. How was that? Because that is based on a book.
It was very sad and hard to watch. It's very, I cannot watch movies with like older people having a hard time like living because they're old, like they can't walk well, and watching Ian McKellen in that state was very troublesome to me.
So
I mean, he's not like that the whole movie, because it kind of flashes back to like 30 years before when he was in his 60s, like solving his last case. And, like, you don't see John Watson at all. And, like, it's just, it's him being very depressed and in anguish. And he loses his memory. He can't remember things. Mm-hmm. So that's why he's trying to correct his last story, because he doesn't think John got it right. And John actually, or Watson, wrote it so that, like, Sherlock would be the hero, even though the story ended another way. And I won't give it away, but it's very sad. There's a little boy who becomes friends with him, and I'm like, he's 92, you can't be friends with him, he's very old. I'm like, it was very hard to watch for me. So I can't say that I thoroughly enjoyed it, because I don't think I did, because I was very depressed when I left.
But like, the acting was good, and the story was good.
The story's great. I wish I'd read the book. I might actually go back and read the book, because I think I would enjoy the story again, as it did. But, it was hard to watch Ian McKellen do that, because Ian McKellen, like, he's young and sprightly, and, like, you watch him in interviews, and you're like, yes, you're the man, and then you watch him in this, and you're like, oh my gosh, please don't die ever in your life. Like, you have to live forever.
Oh my, that's not
good. Yeah, it was not. I was having a rough time.
Good to know. Something to keep in mind if we're going to go see that film. Awesome. All right. One last thing before we wrap up this episode. There is a new Dr. Seuss book coming out. I'm not sure if everyone's heard of it. It's called What Pet Should I... What's that?
I'm on pre-order, so don't worry about it.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. It's called What Pet Should I Get? And they just announced that the audio version is going to be narrated by Rainn Wilson. Which is really funny. He is Backstrom on TV, and he's in tons of other things. He was in The Office, wasn't he?
It's Dwight Schrute, for any of you who think Jen should be banished from this podcast for not knowing that.
Yeah, no, it's been a while. What can I say? Sorry. You're like, let me I could have read I do have an entire, press release on it. I was just trying to, not read from it directly.
I feel like this takes a little bit of pressure off of me for not reading We Were Liars until this week.
I don't know about that. I don't know. 128-page novel, like 7 seasons of a TV show.
I'm sorry.
So anyway, so he's going to narrate it, which I think is really awesome. I think his voice is totally perfect for a Dr. Seuss book. So this will come out at the end of the month. So and it's the first book, brand new Dr. Seuss material since 1990. That's a long time.
It's 25 years, folks.
I know. I was just going to do the math. Thank you.
It's much easier for me.
Well, it's usually easier for me, too. I just hadn't gotten to that far in my conversation point yet. So it's really cool, and I'm really excited to check it out. I think it's going to be awesome, because who doesn't love Dr. Seuss?
I did one of my senior theses in literary theory on The Cat in the Hat, so I love Dr. Seuss.
That's amazing. So be on the lookout for that in the next couple of weeks. And next week, of course, is our book club book of the month. And it was Brittany's pick, Brittany's first ever pick. And it's When We Were Animals by Joshua Gaylord. So keep that in mind when you listen to next week's episode. And now that Comic-Con and everything is done, we will get back to just discussing like bookish stuff. No more like TV and movie talk to excess, which you guys are like, this is a book podcast, right? Just checking. Because I know the last two have been pretty heavy on maybe not book stuff. But we'll go back to our regularly scheduled programming starting next week. And so that is all we have for this episode of Book Hype. You guys don't have anything else, right, Miss Karen and Brittany?
I'm good. Yeah.
All right. So until next week, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany. And I'm Karen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.